Thanks, Manny. Can I be here? Can people hear me?
You say so.
Okay, hi, Manny. I'm thrilled to be in Cork, and it's lovely to see some familiar faces. So thank you very much for coming. So I'd like to read you some Haydn from the collection Undergarments, and a street ballad from, which was published in The Village last autumn, and then some poems from the forthcoming collection. This book, Undercurrents, the publisher and I sat down to write a blurb for it, and the big question was what do we actually describe this as? So the best word we could come up with was psychogeography, which is a great word and covers a multitude of sins. And I found I've been invited in secondary schools to give talk to geography classes about which is another unexpected benefit. It's all about Irish rivers. The Haydn is a combination of haiku-like prose and haiku. And the Haydn are all about Irish rivers. They're interspersed with sequences of haiku. So I'm going to read four Haydn, two about Munster rivers and two about rivers in Mayo, followed by a short haiku sequence. So first one, Between the Weirs. My family moved to Limerick in 1976. During the first cold winter, while still finding my feet, I discovered the Mulcair River. On that first visit, the path to the Weir at Ballyclock was frozen into ridges. The cutaway bank dangled icicles, and branches were weighed down by clustering ice globes. The white water of the Weir was shot through with silver bars of leaping salmon. Scales flash in the fish steps, a glimpse of home. Due to the awkward access, Ballyclock Weir was less popular with anglers than the Weir at Ancoddy, but frequented by poachers and by local kids who spent lazy summer days swimming in the still, brackish pool behind the salmon steps. Dredging silt along the Weir steps, this stiffening denim. Between the Weirs, Limerick Horse Packers Limited, a slaughterhouse from the holding base of which we once managed to release distressed ponies, discharged its factory sluices, sending plumes of bloody water downstream. Lost spinners glint in the river mud. Sundown. Downriver, under the bridge at Ancoddy, lampreys held themselves still in the moving water by sucking onto rocks before transferring to passing salmon, using their discs of sharp teeth to saw through scales and skin, then feast on the host's blood and body fluids. In the shadow of abandoned mills, Nosferatu. After school, my brother and I spent hours standing in the water under the bridge, dragging spinners over the lampreys in hope of foul hooking them. Some would coil around our Wellingtons in protest before escaping downstream. Others we hauled onto the shaly riverbank and prodded their improbable mouths until we lost interest. Stone arches, water parting around our legs. Second Haydn is in Munster as well. It's called Swiftly Flowing Water. The Clare River runs through a red sandstone gorge between counties Limerick and Tipperary. A forest walk loops around either side of the river, rising and falling steeply among pine trees. The forest floor is softly cushioned by pine needles, in contrast to the sheets of rock pavement at the water's edge. Shortly after the sudden death of my grandfather, I brought my grandmother there for a Sunday walk. Her Springer Spaniel ran to the water's edge to pick up a throwing stick, got caught by the rapids, and within seconds swept out of sight. High water. At the corner of my eye, the dipper is white to breathe. I spend a lot of time cycling in East Mayo and investigating hidden places. And last couple of years ago, my husband and I were cycling around Kiltimon. So I wrote this hibernophile. Called Kiladon. The Dlore is a small trout stream in County Mayo. It converges with the deliciously named Polly to form the Beestine before entering the River Moy. The three rivers loop the town of Kiltimon, where the Dlore runs through a wetland sculpture park. Close by is the townland of Kiladon, immortalised by Anthony O'Raftery and a paean to his lost home. Were I to be standing in the centre of my people, age would depart from me and I would be again young. Exploring the Dlore River Valley last summer, we came across a renovated three-storey mill, conceivably on the site of the one mentioned O'Raftery, and now housing the Labyrinth Centre for Peace and Reconciliation. The courtyard is decorated with a fine collection of mill furniture, and the mill turbine and mill race have been excavated with years of detritus. The river water runs gin clear over pebble beds where brown trout spawn. The gardens of the restored mill contain an artificial lake stocked with goldfish, and on a field raised above the river, an archetypal energy's quadruple labyrinth. The labyrinth, laid out in pink quartz shipped from the Arizona desert, was created to serve the highest spiritual purpose of all that walk it. At the centre of each spiral is a standing stone. In wet grass, looking towards the stars, far from home. The last stone of the high one that I'd like to read is called Preserved. It's also set in County Mayo. Larkin Hill, on the south side of Loch Colne, looks down to the east at Atty-Appleton Lake and to the west at Lake Le Valley. The foot of the hill is a commonage grazed by sheep and goats. The lane leading up to Terry Duff tapers off here, diverging into sheep tracks that gradually merge at the bog. And the walker is faced with heather tufts, drifts of dancing cotton, and tracts of bog that betray themselves only by the shiver extending out from beneath the weight of your tread. Spongy hummocks of red and green sphagnum moss promise a firm foothold, but often deceive. Flat to the ground, star-shaped sundews lure flies with droplets of clear, gilly nectar. Stuck fast beneath the starry sky, light falling. Ascending the hill, the terrain becomes drier. Bog gives way to stone, moss to gorse, cotton to thorn. By ear I locate a mountain stream. It is almost hidden in the scrubby undergrowth, except where it forms a short waterfall, landing on a large smooth stone at the head of a quartz-lined pool. I stripped my skin and slipped through the scat scratchy heather. Crossing the pool, my bones ache with cold. I pull myself up to lean on the stone shelf and watch my legs beneath the surface. limbs glowing amber through ferrous water. Evening stings. So I'm going to leave this up with a haiku sequence, which is basically taken from May to October, observing my garden. And I'd like to read each haiku twice, which is why I like to listen to haiku. Loosened by spring sunshine, magnolia buds. Loosened by spring sunshine, magnolia buds. Nesting time, blackbird searching for a mate, gold rings in his eyes. Nesting time. Blackbird searching for a mate, gold rings in his eyes. Late harvest, these rosy pippins sticking to the touch. Late harvest, these rosy pippins sticking to the touch. Slack-skinned figs passed from the ladder top, my raised hand. Slack-skinned figs passed from the ladder top, my raised hand. Golden quinces split from inside out, late bees. Golden quinces split from inside out, late bees. Almonds swell beneath the waxing moon, summer's end. Almonds swell beneath the waxing moon, summer's end. October dawn. Red apples in the dew. October dawn. Red apples in the dew. October dusk. Silhouette of almonds clustered in the brush. October dusk. Silhouette of almonds clustered on the brush. So if there's the opposite of a haiku, it might possibly be a street ballad. I was doing some research last year about Mary Ann Cadden, known as Nurse Cadden, who you may be familiar with from documentaries such as Thou Shalt Not Kill on RTE. She was probably Ireland's most famous abortionist. And there's a book published by Mercier Press in Cork, written by Ray Kavanagh, which I believe has been reissued this year, which has some fascinating research about her. It struck me that this was a story, if ever there was a story that deserved a street ballad, this was it. So this was published in The Village, Ireland's political and cultural magazine, last autumn, and also there was a broadsheet produced by the one of the repeal organisations called Rise of Repeal, it was in 1916 centenary issues, which appeared in that as well. The Ballad of Mary Ann Cadden. You'll have heard about this woman, Nurse Cadden was her name, regarded as a killer, spoken of with shock and shame, but the way she's been depicted deserves some scrutiny. There were many facets to her, as you shall shortly see. Entrepreneurs or criminal, feminist or quack, you can draw your own conclusions, but consider first the facts. She was born in Pennsylvania in 1891, then returned to County Mayo, her family owned a farm. They settled in Dunbridia, under Nephin Mountain, and opened up a grocery shop where Mamie learned accounting. She She ran the shop near Lammerdam when she was 34. The country life was not for her. She clearly wanted more. She qualified in Hollis Street, a midwife for to be. She loved the buzz of city life and lively company. She opened up a nursing home, attracting many clients, then invested in a fine big house on the main street in Loch Lyons. She called the house Melroom. They came from near and far, and with the proceeds of the job, she bought herself a car. A red MG she brought from Wales and drove with some panache, letting it be known that she was breaking in the cash. One day the car was recognised way out in County Meath, near where a baby girl was found in the gateway to a field. Charged with child abandonment, Mamie was sent to prison. The guards went in to search her house and dug up the back garden. Although they found a fetus there, no charge was ever brought. It was only for the living child she came before the court. Forced to sell the nursing home to pay her legal fees, it ended any chance she had of growing old with ease. She was sentenced to hard labour for the year she spent inside. Then the central board expelled her as a registered midwife. Forbidden now to practice, but still young and energetic, she set herself up once again, but as a paramedic. She treated dandruff, skin disease, VD and constipation, and it was she who went to see to get a termination. She worked out of the basement suite in Lower Pembroke Street, then placed ads in the Evening Mail, but kept them quite discreet. On Dublin's finest medico sent her their referrals. She saw widows, married women, the well-off and working girls. But a girl with an infection was admitted to the coon and told the guards what Cadden did in her consumption rooms. This led to Mamie's second trial in 1945. The sentence was handed down as 5 more years inside. Completely on her uppers, by the time she was released, she started working once again from a bedsit on Hume Street. It was only 1 year later that Bridget Breslin died. Her corpse was found on Hume Street. No one was ever tried. But suspicion rose that Mamie was still practicing her trade in her hovel of a bedsit and with someone else's aid. For a certain man was questioned about the girl who died. His address was in her handbag. His car was seen outside. It was he who Mamie called on when she lost another woman. He came early the next morning to help with the removing. The deceased, Helen O'Reilly, a mother of six Chiselers, had sought out Mamie's service, but an embolism killed her. And so in May of 56, another charge was brought of murder against Cadden, and she came once more to court. The mob was out to get her, though the evidence was scrappy. They demanded retribution, only hanging would make them happy. 9 days of evidence was heard from the prosecution. The jury found her guilty. The sentence, execution. Her lawyers mounted an appeal against a death so brutal. After protests to the president, the sentence was commuted. A life in prison lay in store, but after just 1 year, they transferred her to the mental, for reasons still unclear. Compared to Mountjoy Prison, conditions there were fine, and she died there 1 year later, in 1959. No doubt another took her place. Demand was always there, and the UK was an option for those who had the fare. But when you talk of women's rights and argue to and fro, remember that death sentence passed just 60 years ago. Moving on to what John called poems with small key, I think. And these are some poems from my collection, First of Feathers, which is coming out in the autumn. To be launched, a mini launch, I think, at the Drumineer Literary Festival on the 7th of October and a Dublin launch on the 16th of November. Please come, Pier Street Library, 16th of November. The title is First of Feathers, and I'm going to start reading the title poem which won the Allen Prize 2015. First of Feathers. The woodcock lies still, head lolling towards the weight of his long beak, matte black eyes camouflaged in mottled brown. I tug the silken down against the grain with steady thumbs, mindful not to break the cobwebbed skin. Bared, the breasts are clean and smooth. I crop the twiggy legs. Small claws gesture from the feather corner. The wings I open like a book, press down, stretch out the elegant pins, scissor through the shoulder joint, use a knife for the sinews and skin. Turned over, the back is quick to pluck, and congruously large the head and feathered neck. I cut them off, the long beak faced away. The white mound of rump is stubbled by pale, thick-knitted quill stumps. With the knife point, I enlarge the vent, finger out the looped beige guts. Squeezing beneath the wings, I probe for organs, anxious not to squash the little bundle out of shape. How clean it seems, trust naked, though I can't erase the trace of tough and powdered belly from my fingers. I had a bumblebee's nest in my garden a couple of years ago, so I discovered when I was weeding, I reached out to pull some long grass and found they're taking the lid off a bee's nest, and they rose up, but they're very benign creatures, bumblebees. This was published in Cyclops 82. Bumblebees. There was no need to fret about the bees, their fragile nest, unlidded as I pulled weeds beneath the apple tree, their squirming larvae enabled to my gaze into the sun. They watched me from the border while I hastily replaced the roof, before returning to re-thread the fibres of their grassy bone. In the cleared weeds, I see their entrance and their exit, how their flight paths sweep the garden in an arc, stitching up the canvas of this space, as if they could remake the world which lies in shreds around us. The dome moves as I watch it, the stretching of an inchoate form. When morning comes, it glistens with white dew. I mentioned the Mulcair River in one of the high ones. I went to school in County Limerick and we moved from Dublin when I was 8. And I had 4 absolutely blissful years hanging around on farms before health and safety was an issue. So this poem is called Starting Secondary School. That would have been the summer that we piled into the trailer parked beside the combine harvester. Let showers of grain cascade over our heads, a potpourri of wheat and earwigs, beetles, dust and mice, and it was paradise. Jack's fall from the barn was the first blow to our cavorting. Both collarbones was all he broke, but when Bill slipped from the horse block, something worse cracked on the road. August came hard after July. They felled the tree where John's da hanged, though the overpass soon took its place. Milch cows flicked their shit-encrusted tails. Worm-shot mushrooms blackened in rank grass. Pigs shrieked. Ponies bucked and bit, and rabbits stripped the cabbage field. While ticks embedded in our sweaty flesh, leaving welts beneath the wool of new school uniforms, expensive gabardines we'd never wear. As elderberries purpled, phone lines sagged with strings of swallows getting ready to migrate and go with it. I have one brother, and he has 2 sons, and I have 2 daughters, and gender politics are quite active at family get-togethers. So this is my Christmas poem this year, called Cutlery, the Importance of. Men were supposed to wield long knives, preside at table, carve thin slices sidelong. Yet when my father handed on the roe, I didn't yield my brother's face, and with a small sharp kitchen knife, excised the white meat from the bone in one long piece, and on a board I carved the breast from left to left, each portion of an equal size, featured with its strip of crisp bronze skin. I removed the legs, deboned the thighs, and piled a platter high with white meat, brown meat, drummers, wings, and chunks of stuffing packed with nuts. My task was executed well. Why then, the small, sharp twist of shame that I cut the flesh against the grain? I was reading a review of one of A.D. Henry's poems recently, and there's a phrase about how, something about how everybody I loved was alive, or everybody who mattered was alive. What was the idea behind the next poem tonight? Really amazing holiday with my parents and my husband and my kids, and everybody was alive, and it was great. And it was during the heat wave in France, and this poem is called Canicule, the French for heat wave. Hot mercury oozed in glossy beads from a cracked tube on our terrace by a pool which slowly bloomed to algal green. At dawn, after a storm, I swam laps, then, running short of breath, resurfaced by a snake washed off the hill. While some succumbed to heatstroke, we remained indoors, took showers, ate a well-chilled melon in the shade, watched through slatted shutters, ripe figs flop from off the tree and bake in honeyed union with parched grass, to be worn away as sugar crumbs by aunts who knew such days would never last. Quite interesting with sort of traditional forms and sea shanties and things like that. So this is a wood chopping poem. And the reason I decided to read it tonight because there's an old friend of mine who died last week had Alzheimer's disease and was a woodsman. So this was written for him a couple of years ago. It's called The Spalted Man. Resin studs and the cherry's bronze skin, gold rings and purple ribbons, the thud and crack of the swimming axe, winter wood meets splitting. The moss-furred crust of the ancient corn, its splayed white curds gleaming, thud and crack of the swimming axe, winter wood meets splitting. The spalted beach, felled by winds last spring, was filigree etched and rotten, the thud and crack swimming axe, winter wood meets splitting. Beyond the mountain lives a man whose winter wood needs splitting, and I am a crow at his hollow core, forgotten though he's living. The thud and crack of swimming axe, winter wood meets splitting. So, two poems left. Kathleen Jamie is my all-time literary hero. She's a wonderful poem in her first collection, The Queen of Sheba, which is called Arrowheads, and it's about visiting the Edinburgh Museum and looking at a collection of arrowheads, but she's visualising them as being some fossilised granny's tongues berating visitors to her museum. But I found, I got a lovely collection of arrowheads in a market a few years ago. They were American arrowheads being sold by a missionary, and I was putting them in a compositor's tray last year. This poem's called Points After Kathleen Jamie. My arrowheads, no harsh tongues these, but tiny points for felling forest birds, falsum and clovis, and creamy stone, black flint, and splintered chert, bound to a shaft by hide. Arrayed before me here by hue and heft as I renovate a printer's tray, drawing a blade along each joint, fine brushing every nook and crack, spirit swabbing to ensure a grip for backing papers, chosen to offset the colours of each stone, cast light on hard-struck angles. Tools fallen out of use, They take their place in ink stained wood, nestled in the abandoned bed of words. The last poem is called Crow. I spent a couple of days with my daughter watching a grey crow fledgling. And they're the most extraordinary birds, totally maligned in the countryside, but they have this amazing family structure and will look after their young. So the fledgling we were watching, its parents, but also its siblings from the previous 2 years, were watching in the canopy of the tree to check in that it was all right. And it was a really beautiful thing to watch. And we were also discussing tattoos. Crow. 12 months after the last shedding, I inscribe you in my skin, hooded one, who from the shading canopy observe your fledgling young try out their wings. Your monochrome disguise deters close scrutiny, the brash pink jay your foil, while you, unseen, craft tools for winking gloves, calculate the drop required to crack mud. Black ink faded to slate grey, refreshed through further needling. Skeletal shades of white etched through dull mat like lime which feathers vein. It stings, scoring you into my breastbone, down each hard knot on my spine. A wing to run from scapula to coccyx, poised and ready. Thank you very much.